Good afternoon. This is Wilps. I was going to say wake up call. I'm still used to saying that. We used to be a morning show, and now we're an afternoon show. And we are on every Wednesday afternoon from 5 to 6 o'clock with the kind of news that you need to know. It's the news that you're not going to get on commercial media, or at least there would probably have a different slant. So we're very happy to bring you Wilf's report. Wilf being the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. We hope that you read the article about us on Sunday's Chapel Hill newspaper. There was a really well-written article by John Sharp. Was the reporter, and it told about us celebrating our 75th birthday, 75 years in this community. We are Triangle Wilf, the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, the Triangle Branch. Nationally, of course, we're much, much older. We're 95 years old, started in 1915. By the very famous and wonderful Jane Addams, and started here by no relation but Charlotte Addams. Anyhow, we had a big celebration on Sunday night, December 5th, at the Community Church in Chapel Hill. And I'm here with Dick Paddock, our engineer and co-host.
Good evening. Dick Paddock here.
And Lori Hoyt here. And we had a blowout on Sunday night. It was wonderful. We had, I must have been close to 100 people there. I know we hoped to have 75, expected to have 75, and I know more and more chairs had to be brought in, so 90 to 100.
Yeah, I'm guessing that's true.
Yeah.
Everyone was welcome.
Everyone was welcome. And all the best people in town, of course, all the wonderful activists and friends of activists and family of activists. And we had a wonderful celebration, starting with the Raging Grannies. And then we had readings from each of the decades that we have been in the community, with the prelude to the Second World War, on through to the women's movement, the Vietnam War. Very short readings from minutes from each of those decades. And then we had a wonderful video that told about who we are and what we do.
And what we hope to do, to
and
a
what we
extent.
Hope to do, yeah. And then
don't
we
forget CJ.
And oh my gosh, one of my favorite people in the world, CJ Suett, the sacrificial poet. He was on our program last week,
right?
Reading some of his poetry, and we love him so much. We definitely wanted him to share in our celebration, and he did, and was one of the big hits of the celebration. We also had one of our national co-presidents here who made a presentation, and we had great food, an international buffet, and I want to just recognize a Mediterranean Deli and a Vimla's Curry Blossom Cafe for wonderful food, which certainly enhanced everyone's enjoyment. So it was a wonderful evening with good friends, good food, good music, good poetry. Anything I'm leaving out, Dick?
No, I think that that pretty much covers it. But there was definitely lots of friendship and spirit.
Yeah,
celebrating where we've been, where we are, and trying to project which way we're going forward. And since we know which, unlike some people I could name, we have actually looked back to see where we came from, so we know where forward is, which direction to go.
Well, and I just want to say thank you to you, Dick, and Lib Hutchby, another member, who have spent the last few months, I don't know, 3 or 4 months, delving through our archives at Duke University and making right. copies and then bringing them back, and along with Ann Powers, getting them organized in some semblance, I think by decade, these notebooks right. by decade.
And that's something you didn't mention, actually, was the...
yes.
The
display.
Scrapbooks, display.
The and, exhibit.
And also a timeline accompanying
yeah.
it. So... those things were both good.
Yeah, it was a whole yeah. whole wall of exhibits from this searching through our archives and photographs, big posters with
yeah.
all kinds of wonderful tidbits and that enhance and show our history and enrich just the
right.
words. It was mm-hmm. it was also pictures and photographs and newspaper articles. It was wonderful. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
So we all pitched in and made it a great celebration. So we just wanted to, we've been talking about it for the last several weeks, so we just wanted to give a report of how well it turned out. We're expecting a guest who got delayed at work a bit and will be here about 5:30. Now, it's Mansoor?
Mansoor.
Chima. Mansoor Chima, who's also an old activist friend.
Right. We ran into him most recently at the People's Channel.
Yeah.
Where we were taking some training, and he was there. He does work there at the People's Channel. And so he's from Pakistan, and he's going to be on. When he arrives, he'll be talking about the situation in Pakistan. And they're rather sad, desperate plight of so many people in Pakistan.
And it's gone, seems almost completely off the yeah. radar, hasn't it?
It's very, very, very disappeared.
Yeah.
Because, things keep coming up. But this is has got to be one of the larger disasters. And I look forward to, with some trepidation, actually, hearing about what's happening and what's
yeah.
and what's not happening.
Yeah.
It makes you think a little bit of Katrina.
Yes, only Katrina even fourfold, tenfold. I mean, with the numbers of people, the tragedy
right.
was very similar in mm-hmm. in many ways. And in both instances, it's not... A man is not a tragedy caused just by nature, which people tend to think, oh, there's a flood, oh, there's a hurricane. But each of them are the result of man-made interventions in nature.
Yeah, at least partially. Yeah.
At least partially. So that, yeah. And now with global warming and with people cutting down trees, so there's not the support systems to soak up when there's too much rain. But this was really a shocker.
Right.
When it's what across about a third of the country or so, if not something like that.
Seems right, yeah.
But I better not be guessing. We'll wait for,
yeah, for, we'll wait for the one who knows.
For the one who knows. In the meantime, we also wanted to express our sadness and condolences to the family of Elizabeth Edwards. You know, she was put up a good fight. She was handled her illness with such grace and
right.
you know, and shared so much of what she was learning and her resilience and what got
right.
her through.
That was the name of her last book, Resilience.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the name that comes to mind when you think of her, you
right.
know, with the good fortune she had and part of her life and these last years.
Well, there were two separate tragedies, one mm-hmm. around her marriage, but also when her son was killed
that's
in
the right.
auto accident.
That's right.
And but she... She was able to model for us the ability to work forward and keep on moving and setting us an example of how to take that kind of difficulty in stride and contribute to the world. Bless you.
Thank you. Yeah, I guess, you know, she's a good example of grace under pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And Dick, you can tell I've got a cold, and I'm going to have you do a little bit of talking here, some things we're going to talk about, and I'm going to go get a drink of water.
Okay. One of the items that has been in the news lately has been the whole WikiLeaks issue and the problems that Julian Assange in particular has been having, and the obvious attempts, I say obvious, at least in one case we know that Joe Lieberman, the senator from Independenceville, party of one, had intervened and in order to Manzoor just came in, so we'll let WikiLeaks go and invite you to go ahead.
Manzoor, welcome to our WILF radio show, and we'll do a sound check since you just got in here, and we'll see how Dick, let us know how he's sounding.
Okay, thank you, Laurie. It's a great pleasure and honor to be on your radio show.
Good. So the sound is good, and Manzoor, you look good.
Thank you so much, once again.
I know you rushed here from work, and we're very, very happy to see you. We started, Dick and I, trying to dredge from memory some of the statistics about the flood in Pakistan, and then realized that when you got here, we could get the accurate thing instead of us playing a guessing game here. So, have you caught your breath?
Yes. Yeah. No. Thank you. Once again, I think this is a very important topic. It is one of the biggest tragedies of recent time, in terms of statistics. The Pakistani flood has displaced about 20 million people out of their homes. One fifth of Pakistan is underwater, which is about the size of Florida. The United Nations has estimated that the damage to the people, to the crops, to industries and living and everything combined is greater than Asian tsunami in 2004, the Pakistani earthquake in 2005, and Haitian earthquake in 2010 combined. Even if you combine all these three tragedies, what you're seeing in Pakistan, it's worse than that. So I absolutely want to emphasize the great tragedy that has befallen on people of Pakistan.
Yeah, well, so I was trying to remember. I we were saying how it's one of the greatest ones, and I'm glad. So one fifth of the land and 20 million people. It's just staggers the imagination. You really can't take that in. And we were talking about how, while at the time there was a lot of news coverage, it seems to have dropped off the radar. And that's why I'm so glad you're here, because I know that the people are still suffering and we need to know more about that.
No, absolutely. This is something that will take maybe many years for Pakistan to recover. And the other piece of the story is that the response so far, the humanitarian response or donations given to the flood victims are minimal. The people in Pakistan desperately need aid. And this is the biggest tragedy, in my opinion. There was a report in Atlantic Monthly some months ago, which compared the aid given to Pakistan, and it compared the aid to the previous tragedies, and it found out that each Pakistani flood victim has received only $16 from Western donors. And just to give you a bit of comparison, if you see the other tragedies like tsunami or Haitian earthquake. So each victim received more than $1,000. So what the piece in Atlantic Monthly went on further to analyze why was there such a big difference. And among many other reasons, one fundamental reason was this rising Islamophobia. Basically, the demonizing of people in Pakistan in through the media and the way the war is portrayed in that area, Afghanistan, Pakistan, has hurt the people. In my opinion, the biggest victims of Islamophobia are people, flood victims in Pakistan.
Yeah, that makes sense that they are the biggest victims, because it was really puzzling. That's the only answer that makes any sense. Why? I mean, I've heard people also say that there's donor fatigue. And I've also heard that a lot of what was promised to Haiti is not forthcoming. So I think sometimes these nations, I'm talking about from the politicians, from the states, from the nations, not from...
As an example, the United States had not sent $1 to Haiti up until very recently. And even now, I think the last information that I saw for Haiti was something on the order of maybe 10% has been authorized and is still trying to work its way through the bureaucracy. Mm-hmm. So
the mean-spiritedness of these wealthy nations is not limited to Pakistan, but Pakistan is the worst, because this is the worst tragedy and the least amount of money. And the least we keep hearing about it. We heard about it for, a week or two? Mm-hmm. Quite a bit. And then all of a sudden it's dropped off the radar. And it seems to me that what you're saying is absolutely true, that the Pakistani people are being punished.
Mm-hmm. And one other part of the puzzle or the tragedy in Pakistan is now many people in Pakistan, the civil society in Pakistan, is actually asking not for aid from Western world or outside the world, but they're simply asking for elimination of debt on Pakistan. Pakistan has $54 billion in debt, which is a huge amount for a poor country like Pakistan. And Pakistan spends $3 billion every year on interest and fees on debt, which is three times more than healthcare and education budget of Pakistan. And it's almost like economic colonialism, the way World Bank and IMF has given debt to the poor countries, and now they are taking the fees and interest from those countries. And most of that debt was given during the dictators in Pakistan. That's another part of the story. Sadly, United States always had a really good relationship with dictators in Pakistan compared to democratic government. So what the people in Pakistan are now saying are that the $54 billion in debt should be eliminated, so that the $3 billion that Pakistan gives away every year should be spent on recovery from the flood, or should be given for people's empowerment through education, healthcare, employment opportunities. So what I would encourage to your listeners is that please join this movement, which is growing around the world, calling for debt elimination. There are organizations like Oxfam, which is a humanitarian organization. Actually, it's in the forefront, which is asking for debt elimination from Pakistan. And then the Jubilee USA is also calling for debt cancellation. So that is one area that we would encourage people to think about and maybe engage in. The other thing is there is a growing movement for climate change reparation. Most of the these recent tragedies that you're seeing, forest fire in Russia or floods in Pakistan, are linked to the growing climate change around the world. And many times, the biggest victims of this climate change are the poorest people in the world, who have nothing to do with the change in climate. Climate is changing due to the lifestyle of the rich people around the world. So the rich countries need to pay for the climate change disasters that we are witnessing.
Well, I'm interested to hear about this whole thing with debt relief, because I had thought that there was such an outcry and so much support for that a few years back that a lot of the countries were forgiven some of their debt, but Pakistan was not, huh?
No, and this is, again, a very sad development. When I was reading, I also found out that Pakistan did not receive debt elimination simply because there was this term in this whole deal that about the poverty level. So they thought Pakistan was not poor enough for the elimination of that the debt. But the recent tragedy has exposed people to a lot of strife and hunger and poverty, and almost entire agricultural production and much of the industrial production is lost. So Pakistan is really facing poverty right now, and it should receive debt elimination.
So now, unfortunately, due to this tragedy, it should fit well within the poverty guidelines. That whole thing with debt and this charging of interest, and then asking people, the IMF asking them to cut back on their social services and their education. And education is one of the ways to lift yourself out of poverty. I mean, the whole thing is so intrinsically immoral and so intrinsically evil.
No, exactly. And we know from USA even, I mean, most of these tragedies are a result of disempowerment of people. And we saw mostly in Katrina that it's not the natural tragedy itself that causes disaster, but it is the disempowerment of the people or the misplaced priorities of the government. If the government is spending more on wars than the social development of people, then you will see much bigger consequences of these disasters. Same thing is evident in Pakistan. The biggest victims of this flood were the most poor people in Pakistan. They were subsistence farmers. Rich people every time have a way to get out of the harm's way. So fundamentally, this is a movement for empowerment of Pakistan, empowerment of common people in Pakistan. And the civil society and the democratic forces in Pakistan are rallying and using this flood as a rallying call to organize people, organize the workers, organize the women, organize peasants, organize the marginalized members of the community to start a grassroots movement for the empowerment of people. And I believe this would be the best remedy or relief for the flood. The forces, progressive forces around the world and listeners to this radio show, I would highly encourage to please link up and join hands with these forces in Pakistan and help them.
Now, are you yourself from Pakistan?
Yes, I'm from Pakistan.
And how long have you been in this country? Or how old were you when you came here?
I've been living here for 10 years. I came in 2000. I'm originally a doctor of veterinary medicine from Pakistan.
A doctor of what?
Veterinary medicine.
He's veterinary medicine.
Veterinary medicine.
Yes. And I did a master's in immunology from NC State. So I've been working in the medical research since then.
Okay. So, what made you leave Pakistan?
Basically, pursuit of higher education. And then I found it a wonderful place. It's a very good place. And I very soon also started associating with the progressive groups here.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a really good experience. I feel that many Americans, unfortunately, have not traveled abroad. This is one. My wife is American, and she never traveled outside the country. So after marriage, she traveled for the first time, actually, to Pakistan. So for me, the best part of living here is to inform people here about the world, about the situation around the world, so that they are more informed in their decisions, especially the political decisions. So,
and do you have family back in Pakistan?
Yes, all my family actually lives in Pakistan.
So when your wife went to visit Pakistan, how did she find it?
It was a very good experience. For the first time, I mean, she witnessed a country outside USA. She had a desire to travel abroad in her college, but for some reason she could not. So overall, it was a great experience. Of course, she saw the extreme poverty and misery too there compared to USA. which is very enlightening and informative for people, how many people live mm-hmm. around the world.
Mm-hmm. So your family, how is your family doing from this flood? Were they harmed by the flood?
No, thankfully they were not in the, I would say, the route of the flood or the flood mm-hmm. area. For some reason, the major cities in Pakistan did not receive damage. My family lives in the capital of Pakistan, Islamabad. It took place around the river called Indus.
Mm-hmm.
And... which mostly is in the rural areas, the agricultural areas. Mm-hmm. So the northwest and the southeast are the mostly affected areas in mm-hmm. Pakistan.
So the agricultural areas, that's going to affect the whole country.
Yes.
When the crops don't come in, it's going to be a real hardship for everybody, even those in the cities then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, Pakistan is predominantly an agricultural country.
Yeah.
Even the industry is agriculture-based industry, like textile
yeah.
or poultry industry. So yeah. This is really going to devastate the country. So, and countries around the world are actually taking steps to relieve the tragedy. For instance, the European Union has given a special quota for Pakistani imports. Whatever Pakistani industry has survived, they are giving it a boost. So this is another thing that we want the local authorities to consider. So there are many ways people can help. Of course, the other thing is a humanitarian aid. There's still a need for humanitarian aid. There's still a need to provide medicines, basic shelter to prevent them from flood-borne diseases. And there are a number of organizations. Red Cross has a chapter in Pakistan called Red Crescent. There's Oxfam, there's Medicine, Doctors Without Frontier, United Nations Children Fund. So there are a number of organizations, whoever people feel comfortable with,
mm-hmm.
They should consider donating to them.
Yeah, and good for you to keep this in people's minds, because there's so much, and we can get so distracted. And I think that's why with the news cycle, you know, there's other things are, like we were starting to talk about WikiLeaks or whatever, and before you know it, people's suffering gets pushed to the back burner, maybe because people get a little uncomfortable too, you know, thinking of such sad things. Dick is giving me the signal.
Yes, it's time for a station break, and a reminder to have the pencil and paper or pen and paper ready so that you can, bless you. yes, we are underwritten here at WCOM FM by Internationalist Bookstore at 405 West Franklin Street in Chapel Hill. It's a wonderful community resource for the books you don't find in the big box stores. And it's not just different books, but a wider variety of books. You can find all kinds of topical bumper stickers for whatever you have that has a bumper on it. You can also keep up with what's the latest happenings by going to either the bookstore or go online to internationalistbooks.org. We also remind you that this is WCOM LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro. We are also streaming on the internet, it's a 103.5 FM on the air, and then on the internet, if you go to the station's website at wcomfm.org, you can overcome the limitations of the 100-watt station by hopping on the internet and doing it all, and getting it anywhere you are in the world. We are conducting an on-air $5,000 fundraising drive right now. We ask you to make a tax-deductible donation to the station through the internet on our website, wcomfm.org, or mail a check to WCOM 208 East Main Street, Carrboro, North Carolina, 27510. Help keep the most innovative and diverse radio station in the Triangle strong. Thank you for your support. And this is also brought to you by Triangle Wilf. That's T-R-I-A-N-G-L-E, Wilf, W-I-L-P-F. And you can find trianglewilf.org is our online internet address. And you can find there, amongst other things, whatever Wilf is up to, what things we are promoting. And also, if you look in the right place on the website, which is over on the left side, there is a there is a tab for reaching our archive, so you can see or listen to some of our old radio shows. They're identified by, and there are many of them still very topical. Laurie?
Okay, well, hopefully I won't sneeze anymore. So back to Mansoor, who is from Pakistan, whose family is there. He's been in this country and for 10 years and is married to an American citizen, but his heart is also in Pakistan and concerned with the suffering of his people there.
Mansoor, do you have any internet addresses that you can recommend to go to for aid to Pakistan? I suppose that if you go to the Red Crescent, you could probably do that, but you probably have some others that are good as well.
Yes, we some friends and I launched an organization called PakistanMatters.org. So it's one word, PakistanMatters.org, O-R-G. We have listed some resources on how to help the flood victims in Pakistan. In the Triangle area, there is another Pakistani organization that is helping flood victims, and this organization called Flood Relief Committee, and their website is frc2010.org, frc2010.org. In addition to that, there is another organization which is more focused on education, but in the current climate is working more for flood relief in Pakistan. It's also triangle based, and it is called Pakistan American Coalition for Education, and the website is PACE, P-A-C-E-N-C for North Carolina, .org. So these are three websites that have plenty of resources. And of course, people can visit the bigger organizations' websites, which are Red Cross, USA, Oxfam, Doctors Without Borders, or United Nations Children Fund.
So there's lots of ways to help out, and every little bit helps. You don't have to be a major donor, but if a lot of us send in our $5, $10, $20, $25 bits of money, that it'll all add up and will be appreciated. So with Pakistan, I think Pakistan is a country that that a lot of us Americans really don't know a lot about. I know it was formed during the, was it in 47 when the partition with India, and that what the Hindus were.
Right. Basically, the Hindus stayed in India, and the
Muslims.
Well, I guess there were probably Hindus in the Pakistan area that migrated mostly into India, and but I always think of Muslims migrating from India to Pakistan. That's what I envision happening during the partition, but that's probably not particularly accurate.
To a large extent, that's true. This partition, before the partition, the South Asian region was colonized under a British colony, and the many people actually claim that the British actually divided the South Asia on the religious identities. And so at the time of 1947, the Pakistan and India were formed basically on religious identities. Back in 19th or 18th centuries, people actually did not differentiate themselves on religion, on ethnic, on linguistic identities. So this was part of a divide and rule strategy by the British, and they have used that in other colonized countries. So unfortunately, in 1947, this region was divided on the religious basis. There was a lot of bloodshed. About a million people died during migration from the area which is presently India and Pakistan to their respective other countries.
And there are actually three pieces, if I recall correctly. There was two pieces to Pakistan, mm-hmm. separated by a big, enormous chunk of India, mm-hmm. which true. Seemed to have been a disadvantageous situation. Can you give just a little sketch about what happened?
Yes. So Pakistan, which was predominantly Muslim, again had two wings in a way. One was East Wing, which is presently Bangladesh, and the other was West Wing, which is the present geographical entity called Pakistan. And they were divided in between by India. So again, it also instructs us that there are many people in Pakistan who are Muslims actually, and who are opposed to this binary division between Muslims and Hindus, and the whole two-nation theory which created Pakistan and India. And they actually give this example of East Wing, which is now independent country called Bangladesh, which separated from the West Wing, even though both were Muslims. But the fundamental problem was injustice and persecution or exploitation of people in East Pakistan by the West Pakistanis. So there are forces within India and Pakistan and Bangladesh that have a dream that there should be a confederation of all three areas, irrespective of religious differences, that we can peacefully coexist and that the religious differences should not divide us.
So another example of post-colonial problems and stresses that we're dealing with today. You know, we can also look at Israel and Palestine and the 1917 Balfour decision, but we won't go into that tonight.
But there is one interesting thing that happened recently.
And Kashmir. We won't go into that tonight.
Right. But just a side note that in Israel, they had a gigantic forest fire that burned 12,000 acres or something, but it was by far the largest forest fire that had ever occurred in Israel. So it's another example.
Because things were so dry there.
Yeah, right. Another example of the problems that we are coming to pay
with global climate change. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And and look at all the forest fires in Russia. Mm-hmm. You know,
right.
And in Greece in the last few years, coming mm-hmm. right up in the outskirts of Athens.
Yeah. But back to Pakistan.
But you know, it's always interesting to look at the history, just like we talked about with our 75th Wilf celebration, and Dick and Lib Hutchby were digging through the archives at Duke University for some months. Getting decades worth of material that we had an exhibit at our celebration, and showing sort of where we've been and things, you know, brave things that women were doing all these decades with Wilf, and knowing your history, like you said earlier, then you know where you're going to move forward, and knowing the history, and since so many of us are relatively ignorant about Pakistan. And I think it's just since, in the context, you're right, of when you talked about Islamophobia, in the context now of war and terror and people getting painted with a same brush without any nuances, You know, we think of Pakistan, just hearing about who was the head of it, and but not about the ordinary people and what their lives are like and what things are like. So, and I think that these people deserve to be known better, you know. And these are the people that the pictures were heartbreaking, seeing them with sitting, you know, on a wall with the water lapping up the wall there, the village destroyed, and the numbers, 20 million, is just staggering.
And that's 1/5 of the population.
No, actually, that's Pakistan's total population, 160 million. So 160, that would be
okay. 1/5 of the land.
But 1/5 of the land is okay. Underwater.
Yeah.
But I absolutely agree. We have seen very disturbing spike in Islamophobia in this country, and actually in this state where Congresswoman Renee Elmer ran partially her campaign on Ground Zero Mosque, which has nothing to do with North Carolina's politics, and she actually won. But
that's scary, isn't it?
Yes. So this just tells us that we, or the liberals or progressives, have to work harder to build bridges with the Muslim community members. Muslim community members predominantly are working hard. They just come here like any other immigrant community members to have a better life here, living conditions. And but they are being stereotyped, demonized, and just used in this new war on terrorism, which is dubious. Many of the pretexts for this war, it's just like war on communism or war on drugs, and this is just a new form of scapegoat that Muslims are being used now. So what we want is that there should be more interfaith, intercultural bridges and activities where people come direct in touch with Muslims and know with first-hand experience that they're just normal, ordinary people.
Yes.
Doing their best to make this a great country.
And a very welcoming people. I remember I go to the community church in Chapel Hill, and I remember 3 or 4 or 5 years ago we were invited, I think other churches were in different weeks, to visit with a mosque in Raleigh, and they had a, like a
open house.
Yes. And served us the most wonderful food, and was so warm and so welcoming. And I've also gone with other women to the mosque in Durham, right near North Carolina Central University. And again, you know, the people just make you so welcome, and that I think they so appreciate that you're reaching out to their community, and they doubly give you back, you know, with hugs and smiles and good food, it's just there's wonderful people out there, folks who are listening. If you want to make a little effort to reach out to the Muslim community, you will be repaid 1,000-fold. And be so glad you'll meet some of the warmest, nicest people you're ever going to meet. And it's a shame. We're talking about the wall that the British left, and have created this wall between, and made a barrier with India, Pakistan, and then Bangladesh. But the walls we put up with anybody is a little bit different. And, you know, it's something we can all be guilty of. You don't have to be a racist or anything like that. It's just very easy to stick with your own kind and the people you feel the most comfortable with, and to move a little bit outside your comfort zone. Takes a little bit of effort sometimes, but it's well worth it. Yeah. And you went way outside your comfort zone to come here for an education.
Thank you. Actually, I've been working, and you know better, Lori, through People's Channel. I have been producing a TV show for the last 5 years. So I do my best to use the media. There's a saying in independent media, don't blame the media, be the media. And this is exactly, I think, the I guess it could be slogan for this radio station too, that you are taking the media in your hands to educate, right, inform people. So I totally support your cause. And
when is your program on? We ought to give plug for your program on People's Channel.
It's called Independent Voices. Right now it's not being regularly produced, though the producers of Independent Voices have produced up to 50 episodes that are on their website. The blog for that show is indievoices.blogspot.com. I'm not very active in the production right now, but we have a number of producers, and I would encourage anyone who's interested to consider volunteering for that show.
So when does the show come on? Does it come on at a regular time, or just you've produced one?
I am not aware of the current schedule from the People's Channel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, well, I guess people can go then. Mm-hmm. What was it? Indievoices.blogspot?
Blogspot. S-P-O-T.
Oh, blogspot.
Yes.
.com.
Is it I-N-D-Y or I?
I-N-D-Y.
I-N-D-Y. Okay.
Okay. Indievoices.blogspot.com.
Right.
And just to give you a brief background of this TV show, Independent Voices, that was produced by youth, women, people of color, and progressives. And it has a focus on women rights, anti-racism campaigns, anti-war movement, environmental justice, LGBT rights. Almost all the progressive movements you can think of in this area. But we, through that show, also have covered stories around the country and around the world. Some of the news story that we covered were also broadcast on Democracy Now! Mm-hmm. and from German TV.
Wow, that's really... Well, and again, let's give a plug for the People's Channel, which we hope to be on pretty soon.
Right.
That's why we took the training a few weeks ago, and we're practicing with a smaller camera, so we don't have to go and borrow it every week and then bring it back. But we're working on it and hope to get video this radio show, our guest part of it, and
as a start.
So we're getting very excited about that. So Mansoor, you work in medical research. You've been working with the People's Channel. You're married. I guess you have to spend some time as a husband.
Yes, and that's part of the reason I'm not very active with Independent Voices.
Yeah, a wife wants a little attention, doesn't
yes,
it?
Yeah. So mostly nowadays, maybe on a few weekends.
Yeah.
I try to do media work or some evenings.
You can stretch yourself just so far.
Yes.
And you work right in the Research Triangle?
At UNC Chapel Hill.
Oh, at UNC Chapel Hill. Yes. I knew that and I'd forgotten that. Yeah. So let's get back. We still have some time left, and just remind our listeners, in case somebody's just tuned in, the main thing that we have been talking about with Mansoor is about the tragedy of the flooding in Pakistan and the scarcity of support that's coming into the victims of that flooding. The nations, they've been pretty slow in sending money there to our country and other developed countries.
Yes, this is what is evident, that the other countries, the Western countries, did not donate a lot of money for the flood victims, or have not given donations proportionate to the extent of tragedy. They definitely need to provide more money for the folks in the progressive movement. What we need to encourage is that USA should cut back its money on the wars and occupation and spend more money on humanitarian aid. What a good point.
Because that's what I think people hear about aid to Pakistan and hear all this money. Well, it's not aid to the Pakistani people. Mm-hmm. It is what? Arms, weapons, munitions to encourage them to fight some of the battles we want fought.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly. And it's only a very tiny proportion of the money they spend on war could be spent on humanitarian aid with extremely good results. People will have good feelings, sympathy towards USA. There will be a better relationship between the people of Pakistan and USA. There would be a peace in the area. People would have more hope. They would have jobs. They would have better health care, better education. So giving money in humanitarian is a much better way to win peace than through war and through weapons.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I've just been reading, I don't know if you heard about or read Greg Mortensen's book, Three Cups of Tea. And then he has a second one, which I've just been reading. I'd read the first about a year ago, and it's Stones into Schools. And that is the point, you know, for such a minute fraction of what we spend on weapons to go and build schools and to help people get their crops going and to help with food and education. The friends that you make and the lasting friends and the lasting good effect you have on another country rather than bombing people. What in the world ever makes us think that bombing people will make them like us?
Mm-hmm. No, exactly.
I don't understand it.
And if I understand correctly, there is some of this going on actually in Pakistan that the U.S. is sending its drones over and trying to get kill the assets or whatever they're called, and unfortunately they seem to not be very discriminating in the use of their weapons.
Yes, they're nowhere near as pinpoint targeting as they try to publicize, and there's always what the horrible term collateral damage, and that really means men, women, and children, and a lot of women and children killed, slaughtered terribly, and the fear that engenders in whole villages. And can you imagine if one member of your family was killed by a drone, how everybody, all your neighbors, everybody in your church, and all members of your family, what they would think of whoever did that? I mean, it is the most ass backwards way of doing things that I can imagine. And it's really, when you read back on some earlier talks by some of our own presidents even, where they would talk about peace so much more, and now it's almost like that's not a word you can use, that, you know, it's being a wimp.
Yeah, everything is like liberal.
Yeah, it's like liberal. It's like everything's hyper-militarized, glorification of the military, you know, and then you have to always ask yourself who's benefiting, and it's the weapons manufacturers and these corporations. Mm-hmm. But that's another program. That's another program. Let's not get astray from the Pakistani people. And I you're going to tell them to get your pencil and paper out again.
Right, yeah. Pencil and paper time.
We're going to repeat again.
Yeah, have you got it written down there?
And I'm going to let you, write it down. You go and tell where people can help again with the Red Crescent. You give it all.
Yes, I will start with the local organizations.
Yes.
The one local organization that is working hard for to help Pakistani flood victims is Pakistan Matters, Matters spelled matters.org.
And so that's one of the main local ones, mm-hmm. PakistanMatters.org.
And there's another local organization called Flood Relief Committee, and their website is frc2010.org. And the the final, the last local organization is PACENC, PACENC.org. PACE stands for Pakistan American Coalition for Education. So all three websites that I have mentioned have plenty of resources on how to help flood victims in Pakistan.
And these are organizations that you know personally mm-hmm. and know are legitimate and will get the money to the right people.
Yeah, these three organizations themselves are not collecting money. They okay. are simply listing other organizations.
Okay.
When they collect donation, they specify which organization they are collecting for. So far, okay. they have collected for Red Cross or another Pakistani organization, Human Development Foundation. So
okay.
these are just resources, local resources,
okay.
in informing people.
That will tell you how to get to. Yeah, and I know you mentioned one of my favorite groups that I've always heard such good things about, Doctors Without Borders.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, the Red Cross to me, well, that's a little problematic, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. Maybe the Red Crescent has a good reputation in Pakistan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also you mentioned again about the Jubilee.
Yes, there are organizations that are working specifically for debt elimination from Pakistan.
Yes.
And the primary organization working in that area is Jubilee USA. I believe it's jubileeusa.org. It's an excellent organization that has a long history, at least 10 years they are working for debt elimination from Pakistan.
Yeah, I think they were like Jubilee 2000, I think is what they started out being called.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of religious groups are really supportive of that, because that really is carrying out whatever way you want to put it, but God's work, and you know, and we'll get into religion.
Right. Yeah. Okay, we've got about half a minute.
Half a minute to say
sign out
that this is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedoms. All You Need to Know, or The News You Need to Know, Wednesday afternoon show. And we're coming to you on from WCOM FM LP. Did I get it all in?
WCOM LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro.
Thank you, Dick. That's why it takes two
right.
to do the show.
And we'll talk to you again next week.
Next week.